first question. Who is going to do this unravelling of the strands?
Parliament?
A royal commission? Wise men? Women?
Well, there's already, I think, a rumbling in Brussels and in London that data protection law is not as it should be. And if there were some momentum there for a rethink, then of course that would be through the usual channels. But no doubt parliamentary committees could do some of the groundwork for that. But academics, of course, have a role to play as well. I don't know whether this is a jaundiced view, but my sense is that academic inputs are welcome only when they are welcome, as it were.
Well, thank you very much for that. Well, we haven't got very much time left, we've got about 10 minutes. Let's just throw the floor open to questions and pick your expert, as it were, to whom you're posing now in the front row there, who would like to answer the question or pushing forward.
Professor Ramsoy, if I had a grandson, a young grandson who was pursuing law, I think I would urge him to become a practitioner of law, particularly if he were very fee hungry, because I think we ain't seen nothing yet as far as the litigious culture. And this is the most hazardous speculation, far from criticizing you, I find it very stimulating, but at the same time very dispiriting. When is it likely that some sort of meaningful legislation will come onto the books? Would you hazard an opinion?
Well, I don't know whether you want me to. I think there are, here in London, we find there are three zones of law, as it were. We're in zone one here. This is the political end of law. And this is where I think the hope really lies for some meaningful reform, because down at Canary Wharf, you're in zone two, there it's just business, and that's the commercial end of law. And I don't think they're going to be rooting too much for reforming the law. In zone three, where the courts sit, The trouble with the courts is, of course, that they are dealing with individual disputes, and it's very difficult for individual disputes they can sort of lever in change, but individual disputes are too easily bought off, too easily compromised, too easily accommodated. I'm afraid the legislative branch I think the legislative branch carries the main responsibility for making real change. If I were to criticise our own academic branch of lawyers, I think we for years we've just focused too much on what the courts are doing and not enough on the regulatory processes in Parliament and elsewhere. But things are changing slowly on that front.
The lady in the second row, we've got a question.
To Nigel Gilbert, you mentioned that one of the things that we forfeit the presumption of innocence, that we come into a situation where there's a presumption of guilt based on a trust in the analytical tools rather than in the populace as a whole. And you also mentioned the possibility of false positives, and I'd like to emphasize that point a bit. Because the false positives are so immensely larger in number than the true positives, simply because the true negatives are such a much larger proportion of the populace. If you have an analytical tool that has been argued as really, really efficient, that is, that 99%, say you're scanning through texts of email messages, to look for suspicious messages that might indicate that someone is plotting terror. And you've managed to put together an analytical tool that 99% of the true terrorist messages will be identified as true as terrorist messages, And 99% of the truly innocent messages will be identified as innocent messages. Well, how many internet, how many email messages are out there on a given day? I mean, millions and millions and millions. And how many of those are actually terrorist messages? Maybe that's a few hundred. Well, 99% of a few hundred, that means that leaves us with a few that are that are false negatives, that aren't caught. That's why we put under suspicion. And that's an important point to actually get, because that is where even those of us who are innocent have something to fear from these technologies.
I couldn't put it better myself. I absolutely agree with you. I have. Let me just a favourite phrase, which unfortunately I didn't think of myself, but in fact is due to Richard Thomas, I think, the Information Commissioner. You said that if you're looking for a needle in a haystack, which is what this is all about, it's probably not a good idea to double the size of the haystack.
Right, the bigger your database, the more likely you are to, the weaker your results are likely to be,
that's
rather
right.
than the stronger.
Yeah.
So if you have a database that has everybody's DNA in the whole world, the probability that a hit that you get is true actually falls.
Yeah.
Andrew, the third one.
You seem rather dismissive of the worries that people have about RFID in terms of the particular scenarios they put forward. Do you have no worries about setting up an infrastructure which might then be repurposed or reused? I think in particular not in the RFID area, but in the National Traffic Camera System, which then had ANPR added to it. And when ANPR was developed and the National Traffic Camera System was developed, nobody thought they were going together. So do you have any concerns about that,
for
someone who's now
13
in this area?
The simple answer is, at the moment, no. And the reason for that is, I think everyone who is involved in the technology, both as a supplier or an implementer, is concerned that when they put it in, nothing can be misconstrued in terms of how it's going to be used. It is not a, let's say, it's not a cheap exercise to install, and therefore there is a key in terms of the return on investment that organisations have to have, and therefore they become very focused on achieving what they're doing, and therefore a narrow beam in terms of the way it's dealt with. In terms of the sorts of activities that it's being used for, there are a lot which is to do with, as I've talked about, really making life easier for people. And therefore there are, if you like, swings and roundabouts on that, and we perhaps need legislation in place that can stop the problems of someone abusing that trust that we put in when we want to make life easier for ourselves. But we have to watch how we do that, because we might stop something that could be of benefit to us. Let me try and put that into perspective. If technology advanced to a stage whereby the drug that you have in your bathroom on its container suddenly changed colour when that drug was recalled, would you count that as something of benefit to you? That means that. The point about that is that drug now has serious side effects, it's being recalled, therefore you shouldn't take it. If you do, you're liable to have those side effects, and you may not have read anything in the newspapers about a recall. Right? Which is what very often happens.
Yeah.
Right? So instead, you go into your bathroom cabinet and you suddenly see the label is red. And there's a piece of a thing that says, if the label's red, take this bottle back to your where you bought it.
What concerns me, to come back briefly on this, is that you say that the focus is on ROI, and that's actually where we find that mission creep and scope creep actually occurred most greatly in these sorts of areas, is where you have something which is developed for one purpose, and suddenly they find, oh, if we do it, if we develop it very slightly differently, we can apply it somewhere else and get money back on some investments. And that's where I am concerned.
Okay, let me give you examples of this in terms of it. This is the first technology where I don't see scope creep. Right? There are real reasons why. The implementers in this technology are this technology is full of partnerships. It is not one supplier. So it's multiple suppliers supplying a solution together. That requires incredible amount of project control and implementation control that has to be involved in getting the answer in. We actually have in this country one of the largest implementers of RFID projects in Europe. They've implemented over 600 projects. And the key piece that they've shared with those of us who've spoken to them and have been involved in some of their projects and talked to the people who they've implemented for, is that in fact, when you implement it, you are saving or you're looking at a particular aspect within that particular organisation that has a problem. And you implement it to solve that problem along with all the other things. You can't then creep it to anything else, because if you did, the crossovers don't actually work to the benefit of the organisation. You have to rethink the second thing that you want and look at it on its own perspective and see how it matches across. Now, there's a lady shaking her head there. I speak this because of the fact that I've looked at a number of projects where, if you like, they've passed the second stage and they're on the third or fourth. And what I'm finding is you do not reuse necessarily what you've already got. You actually implement something new that will solve the next problem. So, for instance, if you're doing one thing that's to do with health and safety, that requires one set of technology that handles that piece over there. If you're then using something else that is about tracking or tracing the products that you're going to use in the manufacturer, you're using another piece of technology to actually record that, but you're using the same network. So the information comes out onto the same network, but not in terms of the pieces of how what you're looking at, in terms of the systems that have evolved.
Anybody who's not yet asked a question, I got the lady there in the second row.
To a certain extent, you could say the Information Commissioner has an oversight responsibility. But I think Richard Thomas said, at a talk I heard him give just before Christmas, that the budget for the office is about £10 million a year. And he was comparing this with some other agency. So responsibility for freedom of information and data protection, all within a £10 million budget. I mean, it's just a joke. So... but I mean, you might say, well, okay, so that's deficient, but I mean, the principle that there should be some public oversight or some agency oversight in this area seems to me to be absolutely imperative, because if we rely on the Naomi Campbells or J.K. Rowling's to, you know, through private litigation to keep prodding a system, well, they'll act as gadflies occasionally, but they're not going to make sure that anything really systematic is done. So, you know,
perhaps one last question from the back.
It was just a follow-up comment to this oversight issue, in that because Aaron's pointed out that there's not just one person with responsibility in these areas. You've got the Information Commissioner, you've got the Surveillance Commissioner, you will have the Identity Commissioner, you've even got the Financial Services Authority that also fines companies for breaches of data protection. So possibly part of the problem is you've got too many regulators with unclear boundaries as to whose responsibility it is. Why is it that the FSA fines a commercial organisation for losing misusing data when that should, in the simpler world, be the Information Commissioner's responsibility?
Right, well, I think we've reached the end of our allotted time. One or two people are slipping away, and I think we ought to stop. Matt, will this be available on the website, the dialogue today and the discussion?
It will be, well.
It will be recorded, it will be up there.
Yes,
Well, it seems to me it would be very, very need for me to say anything except to thank our speakers. It's been very, very stimulating. We've covered an enormously wide range.
We've
had a lot of problems. They're all on the record. They've been on the record, on the wall. They're going to be with you if you want to download later on. So you've got many, many problems to think about. And if you want to give your MP a rough time when you next see him, you can say, what are you doing about data protection and or privacy and or etc. I don't think Professor Brownsword heard my opening, where there's another case in the paper today about a little boy being pushed in a buggy along the street in London and his parents with him. And the question was, should the case be struck out as hopeless?
Right.
The Court of Appeal said it was not hopeless. We'd have to know the exact circumstances of why, how many photographs were taken, why, etc., etc., etc. There's something funny about the case I haven't quite gathered out, but I thought you would normally chuck it out, but not this one. Anyway, so there's a lot to play for, a lot to listen to, and thank you all very much for coming.
Thank you.